And did you hear on my mind every hour of the day without your sweet inspiration?
Happy Tuesday night, everyone. It's 7 p.m. on the left coast, 10 p.m. on the east coast. Of course, that means it's time for the Tammy Jackson Show on the 405. This is Tammy Jackson. As I do every week, I am welcoming you to an hour of sweet conservative inspiration. If you'd like to do so, you know the drill. Interact with comments and questions on Twitter during the show. I try to keep an eye on that, as well as listening to my wonderful guests. You can follow me at Tammy J, T-A-M-I-J. Now let's get started. My first guest tonight is an old friend. Many of you are familiar with him, Rich Botkin. Rich is a retired Marine officer. He was 4 years active, 11 in the reserves. He's the author of the tremendous book, Ride the Thunder, a Vietnam War story of honor and triumph, and executive producer of Ride the Thunder movie. Rich Botkin, welcome back to the show.
Tammy, thank you for having me. I love being on with you.
We have a great time. We're kindred spirits, and this is something that you started, but once you brought me on board, I was 110% on board with the mission and what we wanted to accomplish with this movie. I had you on last fall, Rich Botkin, and it was just before the Ken Burns, Lynn Novak 10-part PBS series, The Vietnam War, was set to premiere. Unfortunately, that series has had their run. They were backed by the public coffers and PBS. People have seen it on TV. The book and videos are everywhere, and that's the power of a well-funded venture. It's full of lies and half-truths, but it's well-funded. So that brings us to Ride the Thunder. I'm going to go back and forth between the two, one being what I call a false narrative, the other a mission to tell the truth about what really happened, about the men that really served there, and to restore honor. So we're going to talk about Ride the Thunder, the book, and the movie in light of Vietnam. And as people understand, and a lot of people know, if you're just listening to for the first time, I was privileged to be part of the Ride the Thunder team, the family, as we call it. The movie's out on DVD. I believe you can even get Blu-ray some places. But it's also out on Amazon. You can watch it, and I'm going to give you links. There are links on the show page. But you can watch it free if you're an Amazon Prime member. And if you're not an Amazon Prime member, you don't want to do that. Well, you can still go to Amazon. You can watch the digital movie, either buy a rental or buy the movie to have in your digital library. So getting back to Ride the Thunder, to Vietnam, Rich Botkin, I want to take folks back. So let's consider that many listening weren't alive during that era and only know what they've been taught by parents or in schools, the latter most likely disseminating a distorted view of the Vietnam War. And then there are those who were alive and believed what Walter Cronkite and John Kerry and Jane Fonda and the like had to say. So let's straighten out a few of the lies. Rich Botkin, in the 50s, communism was a real threat to the world, and it was brutal, was it not?
It still is. Yes, it was. Certainly it was, Tammy, and it remained so throughout the rest of the 20th century. The bold fact is that between 100 and 110 million people died because of communism in the 20th century. That's just the dead. Remember, the dead are out of pain. It's the surviving victims, five, six, seven times that number, who still recall the pain of communism, the Chinese, the Russians, the Koreans, the Vietnamese, the Eastern Europeans, the Cubans, the list goes on and on. Anybody that can think they make a good argument for communism is, I think, not in their right mind. Communism is evil. Communism kills.
Yes, yes. And I wasn't going to say anything about this, but I want to interject something. I have two cousins. I've mentioned them on the show before. They're twin guys. They're 27 years old. They're fantastic guys. They both are missionaries in Hungary with a group called Josiah Venture. Josiah Venture was begun by a missionary couple that saw the way communism had left Eastern Europe, just devoid of hope, of economic resources, of spiritual resources, etc. And they decided they wanted to start an outreach, particularly to youth of formerly communist countries. And they are all over in those Eastern European countries. So my cousins caught the vision. They went there for a summer. They went there for a half year and decided they wanted to make that their life's vocation. They felt called to go there. One of the boys is now married, and his wife wants to join him on the mission field. The other twin is getting married, and his wife is already part of Josiah Venture. And I will tell you, Rich Botkin, what communism has done to these countries. Hungary is such a small country, but has something like the ninth highest suicide rate in the world because they got rid of any semblance of capitalism and of Christianity or faith. And so as they left, there was a big void, there was hopelessness, there was poverty, and there was absolutely no spiritual resources to help these people. So when we talk about communism, it not only kills people, it robs them of hope and faith and everything else we hold dear. So I just want to give people a taste of how evil communism really is, so that they understand that it was a present threat prior to and during the Vietnam War, and it still is. Rich, would you set the stage? Talk about what happened after the defeat of the French forces in Tonkin and after the Geneva Agreements.
Well, that would be 1954, Tam, and of course, it's important that people understand how Asian culture, Confucian influence, it's a roots culture. It's a culture that venerates elders. People don't move. They stay where the graves of their ancestors are. Well, there were about 16, 17 million people living in North Vietnam at the time. Approximately 1 million of them left, picked up stakes, and flat out left. This is not a culture that moves. And these are people, Tammy, that in 1954, it was the equivalent, I think I said in my book, it was the equivalent of 12 million New Yorkers moving to rural Mississippi. I mean, the cultures from the north of Vietnam were different from the culture in South Vietnam. But these people hated communism. They understood the threat to their livelihoods and living so much that they were willing to leave their ancestors' graves, pick up stakes, and move south. 1 million of them, no social safety net like we have here in the United States. There was no welfare. There was no Medicare. There was nothing. But these people had to leave. And then 21 years later, 1975, when we abandoned the South Vietnamese and the South Vietnamese lose to the communists, again, there's a huge outpouring. The diaspora leaves, about 2 to 3 million people left South Vietnam, many of them the second time in their lives, or if they were Southerners, left, and they risked the perilous seas and things like that. We think at least 500,000 people died at sea as boat people, but they risked it all because it was better than living as communists. And the beauty of the Vietnamese in America today, particularly those who are immigrants, is they understand the price of freedom. They understand what communism is all about. They have a bone-deep hatred for communism, and they're fascinating people to interact with.
Yes, you call them the Horatio Alger story on steroids. And
They are. I mean, I don't know of any ethnic group, Tammy, in the American experience in such a short time frame that has succeeded as the Vietnamese have in the United States. It's a phenomenal story. And the sad thing about the Vietnamese, in my limited experience, is so many of them are now becoming Americanized. The second generation or the third generation have become thoroughly Americanized. And unfortunately, many of them don't really care as much about their history and understand the price paid for their freedom by their parents or grandparents. And that's kind of an American thing, I think. But it saddens me a great deal.
Yes. Yep. You write on page 16 in the book. I want people to hear this because I want people to understand. We all need to know this history. It's really important. It's important to us today because we have generations of people now rich that are being enamored of things like socialism, which is just communism light. And they don't understand the danger, the evil of these systems. But you write on page 16, between 1953, prior to the end of hostilities and into 1956, the communists began a series of bloody purges in which identifiable vestiges of capitalism were ruthlessly eliminated. In a series of land reform programs during that period, the communists figured that in each and every village, the top 5% of the population represented landlords, and it was these rich who were exploiting the 95%. Their assets were stripped from them and redistributed to those remaining. Murders of the 5% were carried out with precision by special teams of land reform agents. This is some very harsh, brutal stuff that people in the United States didn't know then. We don't have the media like we do now, and the media we did have were definitely more leftist in their viewpoint. And people even now don't understand that that happened, Rich.
Well, it wasn't just in Vietnam, Tammy. I mean, that happened on a greater numbers in China during the Cultural Revolution and things like that. Everywhere communism takes hold, things like that happen. I mean, the greatest mass murderer of all time is not Hitler. It's not Stalin. It's Mao, and then Stalin. And then I think Hitler's number three. But the communists are ruthless. And that 100 million are their own people, mostly. The Chinese, the Russians, the Koreans, the Vietnamese, the Khmer Rouge, the Cambodians. The communists kill their own people, in addition to those they fight in wars.
Yes, and I just have to say, if you really study Marx, and I actually did study Marx and Engels quite a bit in school, it's a godless form of government. And people might say, well, what's the big deal about that? Well, the big deal is, if it's godless, then people are pretty much utilitarian. They don't have souls. They're not intrinsically valuable. They're not created beings. It's an entirely different mindset. And if they're just utilitarian, then to wipe them out to accomplish the good that you supposedly want to accomplish is no big deal. The farther we get away from the faith and values that, for instance, were very much a part of the founding of the United States of America, the more you get into things like this that are really, truly horrific. Now, the book Ride the Thunder, I ask you to do this every time. Quickly tell people listening, if they haven't heard before, where the term Ride the Thunder comes from.
Tammy, you always do that to me. I thank you for asking that. Ride the Thunder is a title I borrowed from Teddy Roosevelt, one of my favorite presidents, simply because he was such an unabashed patriot. His patriotism was very muscular and very, he appealed to my sense of adventure and manliness. Forgive me if there are feminists listening, but Teddy Roosevelt was the guy. I mean, that guy did not take prisoners, and he lived life with a zest few people appreciate. Anyway, he spoke in flowery terms, but he talked about the men who quell the storm and ride the thunder. He talked about living a life of meaning and going for it, and I think a lot of people miss that today. But when I was a young lieutenant, I saw that speech and carried it around in my wallet for a couple of years, and I thought, if I ever write a book about the Marine Corps, that would be the title. And I was blessed to find men worthy of that title when I fell into the story of John Ripley and his counterpart, Leigh Bob Binn, the heroic Marine Lieutenant Colonel.
Yes, and for a little further background, the speech was delivered at the Sorbonne in Paris, France on 23 April 1910. I just want to read a couple sentences so people get a sense of the tenor of that speech. He said, "There is little use for the being whose tepid soul knows nothing of great and generous emotion, of the high pride, the stern belief, the lofty enthusiasm, of the men who quell the storm and ride the thunder. Well for those men if they succeed, well also, though not so well, if they fail, given only that they have nobly ventured and have put forth all their heart and strength." Rich Botkin, that entire speech, which I've read it several times, I love it too, it emotes a noble manliness that to me is sorely missing in this day and age of effete progressive men.
Yes, I agree with you. It's not safe to speak that way anymore. I mean, Teddy Roosevelt would certainly be ostracized in today's world. I mean, he's a dinosaur, unfortunately. But, you know, Tammy, I do believe that the men who serve in the military to a large degree, not just Marines, but Army,
right,
in every branch, those guys that go for it, that go into the units where there is the most elite feeling and where they feel like they're doing the most dangerous stuff, those guys are the quixotic guys tilting at windmills. There are still men like that, and thank God for that, because if it weren't for them, we wouldn't be talking tonight.
We sure wouldn't, and that's what I was going to say, that it might be against the men of today, but unless you're a Marine or any of the warriors in our armed forces. So I agree with you 100% on that. Rich, Ken Burns and Jane Fonda, they would have us believe that the Democratic Republic of Vietnam, the communists, were kindly, that no purges or concentration camps or torture were taking place. And the narrative in the media and on the left was that the Vietnam War was an unwelcome act of aggression on the part of the United States.
Correct. I mean, that is what they would have you believe. Not the truth. I mean, when Americans went ashore in 1965, Tammy, there were active communist insurgencies in seven countries in Southeast Asia. The threat was real. The domino theory, we propped the dominoes up. The American effort in Southeast Asia bought time for the rest of developing Asia to hold on, to get their systems in place. And this isn't an observation from me. This is an observation from Lee Kuan Yew. Lee Kuan Yew, one of my big heroes, he was the founding Prime Minister of Singapore, and he was an unabashed pro-American, anti-communist guy, and he recognized the American effort bought time and space for those in Asia. Now, war was it worth the price? Was it worth 58,000 Americans killed and all the pain and suffering that our surviving veterans go through now? It's not for me to say, but their sacrifice mattered. Their sacrifice bought freedom for a lot of people that wouldn't have it otherwise.
Yes, yes. Your article, which I also have linked on the show page, "Will Ken Burns' Twisted Version of Vietnam Endure?" begins. "No event in American history is more misunderstood than the Vietnam War. It was misreported then. It's misremembered now. Richard Nixon's 94 post-war observation remains as prescient as ever. With the release of the Ken Burns, Lynn Novick epic 10-part PBS documentary on the war last month," well, this was last fall now, "it is safe to say that the misreporting and misremembering have only been compounded and acerbated. For those among us who expected favorable treatment for the American effort to halt the spread of communism and a serious look at our South Vietnamese allies beyond the recycled shibboleths of their leaders as corrupt American stooges and their troops unwilling to do their share of the heavy lifting, there was evidence well before release that this would never be the case." Rich Botkin, would you talk some about, like you have in the past, about the mainstream media coverage echoed in the message of the Burns-Novak saga?
Well, the challenge we face, Tammy, with the Burns documentary is this. They hold, the left holds the logistical high ground in all communication, because they control much of the press, they control academia, and things like that. The challenge is not currently, in my opinion. I think that there was a significant outpouring of anger by most Vietnam veterans who saw this. They did not like it. But I think Burns recognizes that their pissed offness, if you will, pardon my French, doesn't matter, because in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, it's going to be the Burns documentary, just like you mentioned earlier today. It's in the libraries. For people who know nothing about Vietnam, if you are under 50, Vietnam for you is probably a blank slate. So if all you see and learn about Vietnam comes from the Ken Burns documentary, you're going to walk away thinking, wow, number one, we fought on the wrong side. Ken Burns got at an old Air Force chief of staff, the top guy in the Air Force, to say, we were fighting for the wrong guys. I about fell out of my chair when I heard that one, number one. But the other thing that he very cleverly did was, beginning in the first or second episode of the documentary, he introduces several characters who will go throughout the series, infantry, Army guys and infantry Marines, who begin as John Wayne types, but you can tell very early on that this is going to go in a bad way. And over the course of the documentary, these guys turn against the war and reveal things that aren't very positive about Americans. What he did do, Tammy, is this. He culled out what I call the needles in the haystack. There were about 2,000 men who became part of a group called Vietnam Veterans Against the War, John Kerry's group.
Right.
Many in that group were not veterans. They were fakers. They were stolen valor guys. But in any event, these guys were malcontents and not necessarily good guys, and they had an axe to grind. Well, 2,000 compared to the 2.6 or 2.7 million men who serve, I would say 99% and more honorably, he called out the needles in the haystack, Tammy, and had all those guys on the show. And I tell you, in my time, I started researching this in 2003, up until the present, I think I've met and interviewed hundreds, maybe 1,000, I don't know, soldiers, Navy corpsmen, Marines, about their service on the ground in Vietnam. I have yet to meet a Vietnam veteran against the war, and Burns found them all. These guys are unicorns. They don't exist. But Burns put them all together, and the message they give collectively is that we were the bad guys, and it's just wrong, and it casts a pall over all the men who honorably served. And that's, we're losing the culture war, Tammy. Right now, we're not winning. I expect in the long run, I pray that we'll win. I know in the end, in the Bible, the good guys win. But in the short run here, we are not winning the culture war. That's the battle we have to fight. It's one we can't afford to lose.
Exactly. I alluded to this, I think, last time you were on. I have a good friend here in the area, an older guy that served in Vietnam, and I have a picture of him up on my Pinterest page of warriors that I just love. And he was home from the war, and he was on a base in California. And there was a weekend where he and his buddy said, well, let's go up to San Francisco and see what's going on. Maybe we'll see a bunch of hippies or something. And they just didn't have much to do on base that weekend. So they went up to San Francisco, and there was some sort of protest or something going on. So they just were standing on the street watching. And some skinny, goofy-looking guy runs up to Ty, my friend, who's, I'm trying to think of the years he served. I want to say it was 67, 68. He put a cap on his head, and Ty said, what are you doing? And he takes the cap off and looks at it, and it says, Vietnam Veterans Against the War. And he swore at him and punched the guy in the nose and broke his nose. He didn't find out till the next day that guy was none other than John Kerry. So John,
are you sure?
Kerry,
that sounds like a great story, Tammy. But are you sure that's true?
I'm sure it's true. And they saw him on TV with the black eyes and the broken nose, and
wow.
And so they know it happened. But he didn't find out till later that it was John Kerry. And he found out, he asked some people, and they said, well, this is the Vietnam Veterans Against the War protest that we're putting on. And they didn't know that when they first got there. So very, very interesting. But to me, that's the visceral reaction I get when I talk to any Vietnam veterans. They have no love at all for the John Kerrys and Jane Fondas and Donald Sutherlands and others.
Well, I mean, in Burns' documentary, John Kerry is portrayed as a very reasonable guy and a patriot, and it just turns my stomach. I think most Vietnam veterans I know, especially the combat veterans, have a strong disdain for John Kerry. I remember interviewing John Ripley, who passed away in 2008. I mean, he—I won't tell you what he said on this show, but— John Kerry was not well liked by Ripley and his crew. I remember when he described my main Vietnamese character, Le Ba Binh, and Binh was a Marine officer who served from 1962 to 1975, almost continuously, had some minor breaks in there. But 13 years of continuous combat, when he told me he was wounded 9 times, Ripley said, and they weren't John Kerry wounds. I mean,
right.
Yeah, that was something that I always, in a way, chuckled at, but it wasn't something that was meant necessarily to be funny. It was something that he said with derision, anyway.
Yeah. Well, we could go on and on because there's so much to talk about. We've got a few minutes left here. I want to let people know, if you're just joining the show, I'm speaking with retired Marine executive producer of Ride the Thunder movie, Rich Botkin. We've been talking about Vietnam, about what the situation was like in Indochina leading up to the Vietnam War, about the Ken Burns, Lynn Novak TV series that's now out on DVD. They've got the book. It's in all the libraries. It's everywhere. They're going to continue the propaganda against the Vietnam War. But we did something different. Rich wrote this book, Ride the Thunder, which was amazing. It made the commandants, the USMC commandants reading list. It's just a tremendous treatise on that war, and it's 600 and some pages. It is a big thing. Then Fred Koster came on board and wrote the screenplay for the Ride the Thunder movie. They asked me to help with the team in a small part. It was a great, great honor. And Ride the Thunder, Rich Botkin, I always tell people, it was more than a movie to all of us. It was a mission.
Right.
Everybody on the team, we were determined to get the truth out, to restore honor to our men and to the South Vietnamese who served with valor.
Right. And if we run out of time here, Tim, I would just like to ask your listeners to please view it on Amazon Prime. This is no longer about money. It never was, but I mean, this is not about money. It's about getting the message out. And we're not going to be the only message, but we're one of the messages. And it is a film that should affirm and heal those people who serve faithfully and honorably. So please tell your friends to watch it and spread the word. I say that heartfelt as I can. It's important that we get that message out.
Oh, I concur 100%. Everybody listening, the Ride the Thunder movie website is linked on the show page. The Amazon is linked on the show page. You can go there. You can watch it free if you've got Prime. You can rent it for very little otherwise on Amazon, the digital movie. You can rent it or buy it. And you can buy DVDs. I would tell everybody, buy some DVDs. This Christmas, might be gone past, but this movie is worth watching. It's worth giving to young people, to everybody, to inform them. And Rich Botkin, it's just always an honor to have you on. I love being part of Ride the Thunder, and it would just be wonderful if hundreds of thousands of people could watch this movie and be instructed on what really happened in that Vietnam War.
Well, Tammy, thanks so much for your support. It means a lot. You're in the family, and I can't thank you enough.
Well, we'll both keep fighting the good fight, and I'll have you on again, Rich.
All right. Thanks, Tammy. God bless you. God bless all your listeners, and Semper Fidelis.
Absolutely. You're listening to the Tammy Jackson Show on the 405. I'll be back on the other side of the break with the Alliance Defending Freedom President, Michael Ferris. The Tammy Jackson Show is brought to you by Rent-A-Computer. How can an agent from rentacomputer.com help you? Well, by saving time and money on your next short-term need for a computer, audiovisual, or office equipment rental. Rentacomputer.com provides the rental hardware your event needs and schedule delivery, installation, and pickup right to your office, trade show booth, or event venue location anywhere in the United States, Canada, the UK, or even Europe. Popular event rental products include Apple iPads, Microsoft Surface tablets, laptop computers, sound and speakers, video walls, copiers, etc. Rentacomputer.com can coordinate with thousands of vendors worldwide to provide superior turnkey event rental services with only one point of contact for corporate clients, both large and small. So, if you want to learn more, visit rentacomputer.com or call them at 800-736-8772. That's rentacomputer.com, sponsor of the Tammy Jackson Show.
You are the 405. 405.
Shop Amazon. Support the 405 Media. Click on the banner on top of our homepage. Then you know what to do. The 405 Media is an Amazon associate. That means you get great deals on Amazon.com and support the Talk Alternative at no extra charge. We are the 405media.com. Thank you.
This is Mike from the Wrestling Mayhem Show, the show where we get fans and people in the wrestling industry together to talk about pro wrestling, WWE, NXT, WrestleMania, all kinds of fun. It's a podcast party. Check it out, Wrestling Mayhem Show, right here on the 405 Media.
Listen to the Wrestling Mayhem Show, now 7 nights a week, 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern, right here on the 405media.com.
You're on the 405.
Let's talk tech. Tech news discussions from the people in the industry right here in Pittsburgh. Online, gadgets, startups, and more. Check it out at awesomecast.net.
AwesomeCast. It's all about tech and it's all about gadgets. It's AwesomeCast, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on the 405media.com.
You're on the 405.
I love Tammy.
I love you back, Kurt, because I'm a caring kind of gal.
The Tammy Jackson Show.
I'm just one conservative gal encouraging you to keep fighting the good fight.
Tammy is what conservative insurgency is about.
Tammy Jackson, the granddaughter of legal immigrants.
In Honduras, they had 60,000 murders per 100,000, or something like that. And I thought, whoa, that is a lot.
Like every other person on the block is dead.
Tammy Jackson, the emerging threat from the West Coast.
Tammy has made herself into a rising radio star.
When we have these mass amounts just suddenly pour into the United States, we have a worse problem than we already have had with assimilation.
The Tammy Jackson Show, Tuesday nights, 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific, only on the 405media.com.
Anything for you, Tammy.
You're on the 405.
Welcome back to the Tammy Jackson Show on the 405. This is Tammy Jackson, and my guest for this second segment is Michael Ferris. Michael P. Ferris is President, CEO, and General Counsel of Alliance Defending Freedom. Ferris was founding president of both the Homeschool Legal Defense Association and Patrick Henry College, and continues to serve as chairman of the board of HSLDA and Chancellor Emeritus of PHC. For the rest of the extensive bio, I don't even dare read it or the whole segment would be gone. Just check out the show page. He's just been everywhere, done a whole lot. Michael Ferris, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Tammy. It is always a pleasure to be with you, my friend.
Thank you. Last time you were on, which was last June, we talked about some interesting coincidences. You went to Western Washington University and then earned your Juris Doctor from Gonzaga. I have a brother who's a prof up at Whitworth in Spokane. And for anybody listening, if you're not from this part of the country, it's Spokane. It's not Spokane-y, like some of the sports announcers pronounce
it. Or
Spokane.
Yes.
Yeah, and I also
Oregon, Oregon or something.
Oregon or what?
Oregon.
Yeah. Everybody that knows me, I have to give them a little tutorial on that. That yes, it is Oregon. I also shared last time you were on, because I want people to know about this, because the average person, if they go to the adflegal.org, they'll see all this great important stuff, but they won't know these little side notes, such as the fact that you wrote some fiction books that were the first things that got me acquainted with you: Anonymous Tip, Guilt by Association, and then Forbid Them Not. I read those books because I am an aficionado of legal thrillers, action thrillers, and special ops and things. So I started reading them and got hooked. And you also integrate the homeschooling theme in there, since that's been a big part of your life. And those are tremendous books. So anybody listening, if you want some good books, check out Michael Ferris's fiction books. They're really, really fun reads. Your work as an advocate for homeschooling has literally changed the nation. And I told everybody last time, or you told us rather, that you and your wife, Vicki, homeschooled your 10 children, which, wow, what a tremendous amount of work. And I imagine primarily for your wife?
Almost exclusively for my wife. I helped some, but by comparison, I did a modest amount, and especially since she's about 7 feet away, she did 99.99%. If she wasn't so close, I would take credit for about 2%.
That is wonderful. And I mean, it's such an amount of work, but it's a fabulous investment. I told you I have cousins who are now grown, who are an absolute testament to the power of homeschooling, and parents that are that involved with their kids, loving their kids, transferring their values, their faith, and all this wisdom. And I have some nephews who have been homeschooled and now are in a private classical Christian school. But I see just the tremendous work that homeschooling does in this nation, and especially as we see what the public schools are teaching, it becomes more imperative for parents to really be careful about their kids' education. Last time you were on, we were celebrating the SCOTUS ruling on Trinity Lutheran v. Comer, and the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in your favor and wrote in their opinion, held, the department's policy violated the rights of Trinity Lutheran under the Free Exercise Clause of the First Amendment by denying the church an otherwise available public benefit on account of its religious status. Michael Ferris, just in review, would you briefly tell the story of Trinity Lutheran v. Comer?
Sure. Trinity Lutheran is the first of three cases ADF has handled in the Supreme Court since I became president almost exactly a year ago. And that case involved a Missouri law that was interpreted by the regulators of the state that a playground safety program had a competitive bidding process, and a Missouri-centered Lutheran preschool placed very high in the bidding process and would have been awarded reimbursement expenses for putting down playground safety coating. It's a recycled tire material, and they put it down, and we recycled tires, and kids are safer, and everybody should have been happy, except for the bureaucrats said, no, churches can't participate in the program. They, you know, you met all the objective secular criteria, but you can't participate. And the Supreme Court ruled 7-2 that kind of religious-based discrimination violates the principles of equal protection in this country, and that there was no, you know, it's okay to discriminate against religious people exception to the equal protection principle that has been a key part of this country for a long time.
It was an exceptional case, and one of the things I really loved about this case was that we had Justice Neil Gorsuch on the case. He had just been added, and I think actually in Trump's tenure that there's a very good possibility that we could have some more vacancies come up on the court. And Gorsuch's opinion was very strong. I read his whole opinion, and I really liked it. Some of the things that he wrote, Mike, for instance, he wrote, Missouri's law bars Trinity Lutheran from participating in a public benefits program only because it's a church. I agree this violates the First Amendment. I'm pleased to join nearly all of the court's opinion. He had a couple of things he was concerned about. And he also wrote that clause guarantees the free exercise of religion, not just the right to inward belief or status. And that's really, really important. And then he wrote, generally, the government may not force people to choose between participation in a public program and their right to free exercise of religion. So all of this precedent is so important, Michael Ferris, because the idea that people could coerce us where we have to leave our faith in our homes or inside the church as opposed to living out our faith. And this was a pretty important case.
It was. It's and the fact that it was a 7-2 ruling shows how strong the position really is and how outrageous what Missouri had done. You know, sometimes the 5-4 cases are, you know, a little more contentious, a little closer calls, but this was a 5-4 victory, and we were very grateful for it.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting stuff. Now, I'm excited to get an update on Masterpiece Cake Shop v. Colorado Civil Rights Commission. The United States Supreme Court heard the case, and the case involves Colorado cake artist Jack Phillips. Mike Ferris, I want to read just a little bit from Alliance Defending Freedom, ADF, the website. And of course, for those listening, I have all this linked on the show page. I have the ADF website linked on the show page. It's adflegal.org. And I want everybody to go there. Wait until after the show. You want to hear what Mike Ferris has to say. But here's the background on Jack Phillips. Jack Phillips, a Colorado native and cake artist, opened Masterpiece Cake Shop in 1993 and has joyfully served the community of Lakewood, Colorado for more than 20 years. As a Christian, Jack knows that God can work as he chooses, including using small bakeries like Masterpiece Cake Shop to do his work. God has chosen this bakery to do a lot of different things that we never planned and that we would never want to stop, he said. Jack's faith motivates how he operates his business. So this is the first time the high court has agreed to hear a case involving creative professionals. This is important. And Alliance Defending Freedom stood before the court to defend Jack's freedom to live, work, and create. Also on the ADF website, it presents what's at stake with this decision, which is the freedom to operate a business according to your religious beliefs and the freedom to express yourself artistically without endorsing a view with which you disagree. So in July, ADF attorneys and allied attorneys petitioned the SCOTUS to take up the case. On June 26th of 2017, the Supreme Court granted review, and on December 5, 2017, ADF argued on Jack's behalf. Mike Ferris, did you have a sense for how things went on December 5? Can you give us a little scenario of what took place?
Sure. Kristen Wagner, who is my the chief of the legal department, she reports directly to me at ADF, argued the case. I assigned it to her. Kristen's a fantastic Washington State native and lawyer. Kristen's arguments were buttressed by the argument of the Solicitor General of the United States. And on the other side, there was the ACLU along with the Solicitor General of Colorado. It's going to be a much closer case than Trinity Lutheran. It's probably going to be 5-4. And when I was at the oral argument at Trinity Lutheran, I knew we'd won 7-2, and I could name the judges, and I was accurate. This one, I think we're going to win 5-4. It's hard to say, and it's going to be a much closer situation. Justice Kennedy, who's always a key vote in such situations, said some very strong and positive things. He was outraged that one of the civil rights commissioners of the state of Colorado said such vile things about religious people and asked the Solicitor General of Colorado to repudiate what a judge in his own state had said. Finally, the guy finally succumbed and said, yes, I repudiate what the judge said. And then he said, importantly, he says, tolerance is a two-way street. He says, I don't see any tolerance being shown to Jack Phillips and his beliefs in this case. So those were extremely important statements. One of the more important interchanges was Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg I don't think she actually intended to help us, but she did. One of the questions she asked the ACLU lawyers, she said, do you mean to tell me that if Jack Phillips wrote a case on a case for a heterosexual couple, God bless this marriage, that he would be required by the state of Colorado to write God bless this marriage on a case for a cake for a same-sex couple? And the ACLU lawyer was contending that it's not free speech, but we've got words, God bless this marriage. It's pretty hard to say that's not free speech, but the ACLU lawyer said, yes, he would be forced to do so, and that's the right thing to do. And there was just like the air got sucked out of the courtroom at that moment, and it was a very telling exchange. And so all those things were very good, very encouraging, and I think we have a really good shot at winning.
Wow.
That's case two. Case three is coming in March.
And case three is?
That's the case from California where the state legislature has said that pro-life pregnancy centers must do what amounts to advertisements for abortion services. We represent NIFLA, which is the National Institute for Family and Life Advocates, which is a coalition of pro-life pregnancy centers. There's over 1,000 such centers across the country, and about 140 of them, 130 of them in California. And it's a free speech case. Can the state of California force pro-life centers to advertise for abortion? And I will be personally arguing that case in the Supreme Court in March.
Wow. Wow. Yes, I when I was setting up this interview, I was tipped off on that. I'd forgotten for a moment. And I've been following that carefully because that is pretty egregious to my mind. I have been on a lot of sites of pro-life protests near Planned Parenthood centers, and I've been involved in some interesting interactions where the other side is very vitriolic and pretty profane. So it's very interesting the things that they're trying to force on us. As we're talking about Jack Phillips and this case, there's some interesting things that have been brought to bear, including people with MLK Day in mind that say Jack is like the people that were prejudiced back in the day that MLK was protesting against. And this is also at the ADF website that I found. Jack has been attacked by LGBT advocates and punished by the government for declining to design a custom cake for a same-sex wedding. They claim that Jack's actions violate the civil rights of the same-sex couple. But as we have pointed out, the racist laws of the civil rights era were aimed at the whole-scale exclusion of certain group of people from the economic, social, and political life of the country simply because of a personal characteristic, the color of their skin. But when our clients decline to use their artistic talents to promote a certain message or event, they are solely motivated by the message, not the person. If you want to make an honest comparison to the civil rights era, it's our clients who are facing similar threats to their freedom. The government is saying there is no place for them at the free speech counter. I am so anxious to hear the opinion, Mike Ferris. And one thing, as we were talking about this and that they wanted to force them to do this, I can't imagine any other religion other than a Bible-believing Christian, pretty much, that they would force to do something like this. Would they force a halal store, a Muslim, an Islamic store to sell pork products to somebody? I mean, there's so many things where you could think, would they really force these other people to do something like this? And I don't think that would happen.
Well, it's not hypothetical in this case because, first of all, to be really clear, Jack is happy to serve gay people in almost every context. You know, if they want to come in and buy birthday cakes, if they want to come in and have him design a Super Bowl cake or just a, you know, Happy Thursday cake, whatever, no problem. I was glad to serve these two guys in particular, but weddings are different, and wedding cakes are a different form of communications, and so he's being asked to willing to serve all people but not willing to create all messages. And so if you came in, and I don't think you would, but you know, if person X came in and wanted a Halloween cake, he wouldn't make it. He doesn't do Halloween. He doesn't do all messages. That's a conviction of his. He doesn't put alcohol in cakes. And so the ability to force people to put a particular message out is just anathema to the First Amendment. And so the comparisons are fair. And if the government could force him to do this message, the government can force anybody to give the message that they want, which is, you know, similar to the NIFLA case in California. The government of California is trying to say, you must promote abortions. I know you're a pro-life pregnancy center, but you got to tell everybody about abortions. But in Colorado, a guy that I know, actually, I didn't put him up to it, and I wasn't even involved with ADF when he did this, went to a number of left-leaning cake design places in Colorado and asked them to make anti-same-sex marriage cakes. And they refused to do so. And he filed a complaint with the very same commission that he wanted them to do a religious message about same-sex marriage on the other side. And that commission held that those cake shops were protected by free speech. That was a very helpful fact in the Supreme Court.
Wow.
And the duplicity of the people. So, you know, it's not speculation. We're the only ones that are being forced. And in the California law, the law looks like on the surface it applies to everybody, but once you start reading all the exceptions and all the exemptions, the only people that are left actually compelled by the law to create this message are about 200 pro-life nonprofit pregnancy centers. That's it.
Right.
So, yeah.
Wow. Wow. Well, yeah. It, you know, and it's very apropos that we're talking about all this today, as President Trump had a proclamation rececognizing January 16 as Religious Freedom Day. And this is one thing I wanted to talk about in the last few minutes, Michael Ferris, because I think under this president, many of us, he was not our first choice, and we had other people that we thought were tried and true conservatives. But it came down to Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, and I have been so pleased with what he has done in our nation concerning the First Amendment, concerning the Second Amendment, concerning the military, national sovereignty, Israel, you name it. And so when I saw Trump's proclamation recognizing January 16 as Religious Freedom Day, I thought this was pretty tremendous. He's had a few faux pas, of course, but he has done some great things, I think, Michael Ferris.
Well, I think that you've drawn a very good line here. The faux pas have all been in the area of tweets and things he's said. The things that are really good are the things he's done. And so if you look at the actions as opposed to some of the words, the actions are consistently really pretty good, you know, with very few exceptions. You know, what you want a president to do is to do the right thing. And so, you know, we can all wish that he would be more careful of what he says.
Yeah.
But if we judge him by his actions, it's really good what he's doing. And so the vast majority of the time.
Yes.
And what he did today for religious freedom is very, very good.
Well, I have the statement that you made, and I'm going to read it so everybody can hear. I've got it on the show page as well. So, of course, everybody at the end of the show is going to race to the show page because they've got to click on this stuff. But you said, Americans have always treasured their ability to freely live out their faith. The president's proclamation of Religious Freedom Day today comes at a time when that freedom has perhaps never been more threatened. So we join him in encouraging all Americans to consider the importance of religious freedom and to celebrate it. As the president's proclamation says, quote, no American, whether a nun, nurse, baker, or business owner, should be forced to choose between the tenets of faith or adherence to the law, end quote. That's precisely why we recently argued on behalf of cake artist Jack Phillips before the U.S. Supreme Court. Americans should be able to peacefully live and work according to their beliefs without fear of punishment by the government. a tremendous statement, Michael Ferris. And before we absolutely run out of time, I want to let people know that what you do at adflegal.org, which is bookmarked on the show page, is tremendous, and it's pro bono work, and it's expensive, and people can donate on the website, correct, Mike Ferris?
Sure, absolutely. We'd love for people to get involved in whatever way they would want, but it does cost a lot of money, and we didn't plan on the Supreme Court taking three of our cases in one fiscal year, but it's actually 1.5 fiscal years, but that's millions of dollars spent on each of these cases. And so if people are inclined to help us stand up right and stand up, our motto is that we're going to keep the doors open for the gospel, for people to be able to preach the gospel and to live the gospel. Jack Phillips is an example of living the gospel. A pro-life pregnancy center is an example of living the gospel. So we want people to be free to do that. And our goal is to be as commonplace and as aggressive and as protective of our people and our rights as the ACLU is on the other side. In fact, my goal is to get bigger than the ACLU and to fight back with strength. So just encourage people to get involved with us.
Yeah, what a worthy goal. And Michael Ferris, it reminds me of my friend Hugh Hewitt wrote a book called In But Not Of. And one of my favorite parts in the entire book was that he encouraged young people all over the nation to pursue positions of power, not because those are the most important things in the world, positions of power being political, legal, in the education environment, etc. But he said, because it's those positions of powers that enable the most important to be work to be done, and that's the work that touches souls for all eternity. And to me, ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom, that is what you do. You guys are protecting those rights and keeping this country open, as you say, for the gospel. It's a fantastic work you do. Michael Ferris, once again, I thank you for taking the time. Thank your lovely wife for loaning you to the show for a few minutes here to give us an update. And I encourage you to keep fighting the good fight. I'd love to have you on again sometime.
I'll be glad to do it, Tammy. God bless you. Thank you for having me on tonight.
You bet. Hey, thanks for taking the time to listen to the show. The Tammy Jackson Show on the 405 will be back next week with more great guests. Until then, this is Tammy Jackson reminding you to wake up. Don't be silent. Let your voice be heard, because we have a country to save.
I cut my teeth on the back of an old church pew. I learned to walk in the ways of light and truth. And I was told not to speak till I was spoken to. I heard it preach what I should and I should not do, and the choir sang. I tried to be a good boy, but I ain't a boy no more. I've seen some things that a man just can't ignore. This world's gonna see what I'm standing for. I've kept my peace, but I can't hold my tongue anymore. You can't buy my silence. You can't steal my voice. You can't keep me quiet. I will break the noise. Try to beat me down. Tell me to shut my mouth. But there's a time. The
night I will bring the noise. Try to beat me down, tell me to shut my mouth.